water smart.
I harvest rainwater for my landscape and garden.
I'm a free thinker.
My landscape is filled with flowers year-round.
I'm energy conscious.
I water wisely.
Clemente Design Landscape represents your vision with an understanding of what a well-designed and cost-effective landscape can do for you. Call us for a free one-hour consultation and evaluation at 602-540-3773. That's 602-540-3773. Or visit the website ClementeDesignIsGreen.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. And again, a special thanks to Wes Gullett, who was on our last show, The Entrepreneurial Spirit, running for mayor for the city of Phoenix. We appreciate him in studio. Great concepts, insights, and I think we do a great job in the city. So now we have Understanding Autism. When you thought it was all over yesterday, you're back Monday and Tuesday, every second Monday and Tuesday of the month, Understanding Autism, starring Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. Welcome, guys.
Hi.
Well, you were going to say something else, like, where was I yesterday?
Yeah, what assignment were you on yesterday?
It was a great assignment. I was listening to you guys, and it was phenomenal. You had a great show yesterday.
Thank you.
We had a great guest.
We had a great guest, phenomenal. Dr. Adams. Yes.
I got to tell you, this show, Understanding Autism, does so much for people. It gives them hope. It gives them inspiration, faith, uplifting their spirits. And really, it's a great resource to say, wait a minute, there is something out there maybe I had no clue about. And I think that's a very good thing what you and Paul are doing.
Well, thank you. I also sort of additionally feel like it gives people perspective and information from different sources. And I mean, Paul and I clearly have different and unique life experience and perspectives to offer, but we're hoping that our guests do the same and people can learn. Even one thing would be amazing.
Well, that's all it can take. One thing can make a huge difference in a family, in an individual, adult, as well as a child. You're saving lives, in my opinion. So congratulations to both of you. Now, you have a great topic today.
We do.
What is it, Kim Isaac?
Well, we're talking today about co-occurring conditions with autism. And co-occurring conditions are things that frequently occur alongside the autism, but aren't actually the autism itself. So things such as anxiety disorders, depression, seizures, epilepsy, attention deficit disorders. Also, there are some cases of bipolar disorder with autism as well. But a lot of times, these co-occurring disorders are kind of clumped in to the individual's diagnosis of autism instead of really identifying clearly what's what and treating, you know, what's what separately.
Now, is there a higher occurrence of these disorders that you talked about if you have if you're on the spectrum?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
Do they know why?
You know, they don't know why. That's still, you know, being investigated. It seems that there's a high frequency of at least one or more of those things, but there aren't really, you know, clear-cut answers to why.
I think that's probably not going to be answered until we know what causes autism. And then once we have some ideas of, you know, sometimes it may be genetic, sometimes it may be environmental, then we'll see links between individual causes and specific conditions. I mean, like, there could be multiple causes for autism that lead to sort of different paths of autism that come with different co-occurring conditions, or they could just be random, and we don't have enough information to really begin looking at that separately yet.
And that's currently, I mean, it is under investigation. In fact, some people are developing some notions of subtypes of autism where, you know, this population of people who has autism also tend to have high frequencies of this. And then there's this sort of subpopulation that has, you know, more medical or GI issues or this. So they're looking into sort of subtyping or subgrouping some individuals with autism and trying to figure out where the commonalities lie within those subgroups as well.
And sometimes it's also just sort of difficult to say. For example, we mentioned depression, anxiety, those sort of things may not be directly related to autism just because autism creates a lot of mental stresses that can lead to depression and anxiety as separate conditions, or it could be directly connected. It's sort of hard to tell. So you don't know if it's these sort of depression that you talk about with chemical imbalances and real serious depression, or if it's depression because you have someone who's experiencing a world they don't understand and don't know how to cope with, and because of that, they're experiencing depression. They're having the kind of depression that someone might have after going through challenging life experiences or suffering a significant loss. So it's really hard to separate which kind it is or look at it without the kind of feedback that a lot of times you typically have difficulty getting from someone on the spectrum.
That's a really, really good point. And a lot of times what I see, especially in people that have high IQs and, you know, excellent vocabularies, a lot of times as these people become more self-aware and socially aware, actually depression is likely to increase, because some of the people I've worked with, they actually realize what they were missing before and they didn't know it. And it's sometimes shocking and sometimes upsetting and overwhelming. And so a lot of times, and other feedback I've heard from other consultants, a lot of times when some of the more, for lack of a better word, high functioning individuals start to get better, they can also tend to get depressed.
So, you know, what's interesting as you're both describing this is that the potential for misdiagnosis, where if you have a child or adult, whatever, that actually has autism, but it's masked by depression or anxiety, and perhaps people are looking at the co-occurring condition rather than seeing what's underneath that or at least alongside of it, and maybe they're just trying to treat the anxiety and they don't even realize someone's on the spectrum.
The spectrum is so wide that, you know, you have higher functioning people and then you don't. And especially with higher functioning ones, a lot of what you're diagnosing is based on the symptoms. And if they've had it for long enough that they have some coping mechanisms, kind of like I did, then you start getting to the area of anxiety or depression or attention deficit or other things where, you know, people aren't necessarily seeing the part of you that you're really having difficulty, because you're hiding that. And so what they're seeing is how you're like every day, and you're depressed, or you get anxious easily, or you get upset easily, but they don't really have all the information. And so, and you personally may not have all the information just because you don't understand yourself at a level that you can work through that. So, you know, if you are trying to be diagnosed, they ask you questions or look at what you've been through or look at what other people have seen. And what other people have seen may not contain everything. So there's potential for misdiagnosis. Even if everyone does everything right, the information may just not be there because the patient himself isn't aware of it, and there's not necessarily a good way to bring it out without someone just having the right thought at the right time.
Now, I would ask then is how important, I think I know the answer, but I'll just ask it for the listeners, is how important to have a really good professional in the diagnosis process, because obviously the more skilled, the more, you know, the better the professional, perhaps the more accurate the diagnosis.
I think that's a big part of it. It's I've always thought about this too, is what does it mean in this particular topic or area to have a good professional? And when it comes to autism, it really means you have to have someone who specializes in autism, who really understands it, because there are some really great mental health professionals out there. But autism is so complex that even a very, very good professional or diagnostician, if they don't understand autism and, you know, primarily deal with that disorder, I find that that's where a lot of my clients run into difficulty. It's not so much is he or she good, but is he or she experienced in the area of autism.
I mean, a lot of, I hesitate to say autistic behaviors, but I guess that's the best thing, can be just sort of things that can also be interpreted as he's a problem child, or it's a large part of it is determining whether they're doing it because they're choosing to doing it or they're doing it because they have to do it. And that can be hard to distinguish for someone who doesn't have a lot of experience in the area.
Well, let's take that. That's an interesting comment in that, let's say there's someone that was misdiagnosed and then they focus on the child as a problem. Kim and Paul, the question both to you is that if you treat, let's say some parents will treat a child as a problem, and they treat it based on their own skill sets or lack of skill sets, does that contribute even further to more problems for the child? I mean, if you're going after the child and they could lower their self-esteem, and that's number one. And then how about that connection with being on the spectrum? What does that make autism worse, for example?
I don't know if I would say it makes autism worse, necessarily. I think autism is something that it's hard to have a concept of better or worse about in general, necessarily. But because you're dealing with someone where you're going to give them a stimulus and they're going to react in a certain way, and you're used to the way people that you're normally around react, when you are trying to say, no, don't do that, or whatever, that their reactions are not going to be the ones that are on the scale or direction that you expect them to be. And it sort of can create a feedback loop where they don't react the way you want them to, so then you don't react, so that they don't react again. And so it's not necessarily that it makes them worse, but it creates a worse interaction between the two of you. And that can sort of snowball up to something larger where you're frustrated with the child doesn't understand why you're frustrated, they're doing something they think may, you know, fix the situation, but you just see it as a worse behavior, and it keeps going.
And on that note, Paul's exactly dead on with that. The result of those kinds of interactions, though, are resulting in feelings of incompetence on both sides. So while, you know, so you have these interactions that are confusing or negative or frustrating, and what happens is the child, you know, is confused, so that he or she ends up feeling maybe frustrated or lower self-esteem, but that actually happens with the parents too. They feel like incompetent parents. It's like, I'm doing everything I know how to do. The best parents, you know, when it comes to autism, can feel like failures because they're employing all of the parenting skills that are good and under typical circumstances might be the best thing to do. But when it comes to autism, there's such a breakdown in the feedback loop that it damages the self-esteem on both sides, and it causes a lot of misunderstandings.
So maybe one thing parents can do is to not participate in this feedback loop, perhaps, and really start to understand, well, what don't I really know about this? Because it doesn't serve a very good purpose to continue pushing each other's buttons.
Well, I mean, that's part of the problem, is that you're not participating in that feedback loop because you want to most of the time. You're participating in it because you don't know that you shouldn't be, that you don't realize that it's happening. So, you know, hopefully any parent who's aware that they're dealing with an autistic child and generally wants to improve the situation is doing what they can to learn about it. And that can sort of help avoid that. I mean, there's going to be mistakes. We all have assumptions about how we interact with people. And sometimes you think something is so obvious that you expect the child to react the way you expect them to be without even thinking it could be different for this thing.
Right. It's such a different way of thinking and processing information and interactions. In my experience, it seems like when you're dealing with a person on the spectrum, you have to be continuously communicating and evaluating and realize that there's not really an end point to that. It's an ongoing process of learning about each other. I mean, you have two people that are thinking and processing communication and situations and people very differently. Even as one on the spectrum gets, you know, quote unquote, better, there's still going to be a lot of communication that needs to be had. And I go into it with parents and, you know, students with the mindset of, I want to understand you better. I want to understand this better. And I'm always going into it with that attitude because it is so complex and humans are dynamic and it is difficult because in typical feedback systems, there are some assumptions that we have based on the development that we've had, but people with autism don't have those same set of learned or common type assumptions.
And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with the stars of Understanding Autism, Kim Isaac and Paul Loudon. We're talking about co-reoccurring conditions. Is that correct?
Occurring conditions.
Co-occurring conditions, not re. Oh, yeah.
Or comorbid conditions, actually. Wow. In the psychology world, they call it comorbid.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I think we'll call it co-occurring.
I like
the morbid one. And we'll be right back.
How healthy is your business? Is your business plan helping your bottom line? Do you even have a business plan? Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business has over 25 years of helping businesses of all kinds and sizes to get them where their owners want them to go. She uses her special wellness check process. It's to assess where your business is now and then uses her own unique 7-steps business excellence plan to expand and grow your business into something to be proud of. Barbara will take a holistic or a global appreciation view of your company, and that's absolutely going to make a difference to your bottom line. So call now and schedule a wellness check and watch your business grow. 602-750-4518. That's Barbara Haggerty of Mind Your Own Business. 602-750-4518.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac, and this is Understanding Autism, which can be heard every second Monday and Tuesday of the month here on KXXT, 10:10 a.m. from 3 to 4. And, of course, in this corner, we have Kimberly Isaac. Oh, that sounds like a boxing match. Are you a boxing fan? Maybe not.
You know, I used to be a UFC fan.
I love MMA.
Well, I did. I'm sort of, well, you know, football's my new thing.
Oh, yeah. Oh, go Cardinals. Mm-hmm. Now, you know who we're having on tomorrow? Jeff Mayweather, the uncle of Floyd Mayweather, boxing this Saturday against Ortiz, 42-0. Can you believe it?
No.
42-0. I think he's 34. Anyway, that's going to be good as well as... We have Michelle Rosado, face-to-face events. Yeah, she's going to be here, I think, from 2 to 3 tomorrow on our sports show. Anyway, a little sports action. Now, Kim, You are an RDI consultant. Wow, it's been a long time, 15 years.
15 years.
See? That's a long time, and yeah. You are so amazing. I remember, I've told the story, first time I saw you, and I go, what a gift you had. Way before just progressing and learning more and more, you just had that natural instinct, and I think your clients are blessed to have you.
Well, thank you. I actually feel that way about them. I feel blessed to have them.
See, that is very cool. And then, of course, Paul Loudon, all the way from Texas. I got to tell you, you fly out here once a month. It's incredible, your dedication, your determination to really help others, because you've been on the spectrum, what, for about 4 years now, 5 years?
Well, I've been on the spectrum my whole life.
Well, yeah.
I was diagnosed,
I should say, yeah.
About 5.5 years ago now.
Yeah, and you're 27 now?
28.
You just turned 28.
Well, I turned 28 in January.
How was that?
one more than 27.
Okay.
I don't know.
But anyway, this is a great combination, because you give such a great perspective. Paul, you are living it, and I know you've talked before on other shows, once you found out that you're on the spectrum, there was some type of relief, at least.
For me, at least, yeah. As I said, it was a relief. As we've sort of been talking about in the show with co-occurring conditions, I was diagnosed with ADD. I was diagnosed with depression. Treatments for those didn't really feel to be working to me. People around me sort of felt that there was some improvement, but personally, I didn't typically feel any better. I saw, I don't know if it was a psychologist or a psychiatrist, I saw someone who I sat with in a room and talked to.
Did they prescribe medication?
The thing is, I saw a few people, and I think one of them did, okay. And then other ones didn't. So
if someone prescribes, it's a psychiatrist. They are the only ones who can prescribe, and then psychologists don't prescribe. Just clearing it up.
Right? Yeah.
I knew one could. I just can't remember which one's which, because anyway.
You've seen a lot of people.
Yeah. So in high school, ADD and depression, and things just didn't really help much with that. And then afterwards, when I finally got diagnosed, it sort of gave me some tools, especially to deal with the depression, just because I could. It wasn't just something that was happening to me anymore. It was something that I could start to understand. And I guess, like Kim has said, I can very much relate to, you know, she said she's talked to people, and some of them, as they're getting better, the depression sometimes becomes worse. And it's true. One of those feelings you have when you're dealing with something like this is you look at it, and sometimes you think, this is something that isn't something I have, it's something I am. I am a person, this is my brain, and this is how it works. It's different from other people. And so I'm learning how to handle it rather than learning how to, you know, it's not getting better, it's taking advantage of what I have. And it can be depressing at times to think, this is something that I'm going to carry with me for the rest of my life. Yeah. And there are times where it's sort of hard to move past that and go, but that doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing.
Which is a great way of looking. That's a great outlook, actually. And do you want to give out, you have some contact information, right?
We're always happy to hear people get in contact with us. And we love to hear feedback at our Facebook page, facebook.com/understandingautismradio. But more immediately, we have the telephone number here at the station, 602-296-3632. And you can call us on that or text us at 832-278-1441. We'd love to answer your questions on the air.
So what was that again, the text number?
832-278-1441.
That would be great. This is such a great opportunity for people that are curious. And you were saying I don't know if you use the word curiosity or curious, but that's what you were implying, that people should be curious. And whether you're on the spectrum or not, you should be curious just about life in general. You just never know what you don't know.
Exactly. I mean, the idea here is that people make assumptions, people go through life, and it's always better if you ask questions. There's something to learn about everyone, people on the spectrum or not. And what we'd like to just have is, I guess, a conversation with our audience ongoing, so that, you know, people who want to learn more about either my specific experiences or Kim's knowledge, or want to share their own stories maybe that might be relevant to topics we discuss, we'd love to have them provide feedback so that we can better address what people are interested in.
Yes, that's definitely, we actually, one of my goals, our goals for this show is to encourage a lot of interaction. I know actually you and I spoke earlier about you know, not everybody, there's a lot of different therapies out there. There's a lot of things that people on the spectrum need just as a need. And then there's the financial aspects of all of that stuff. And one thing I'm hoping that the show can offer as well is not everybody can afford every kind of therapy. And we're hoping that we can provide some insight with either one of our topics or one of our guests or one of us to give some insight to somebody who maybe, you know, couldn't afford a professional in that particular area, or at least to spark some food for thought to go research, or maybe they hadn't thought about getting a professional in that area. But I'm hoping that we can collaborate with our audience. That's my big goal, is I enjoy having co-hosts, and this is good. We collaborate really well. I would love to have our listeners, you know, join in on the conversation and participate.
You know, and what's important, too, is a lot of people are only, they pay attention to the topic at hand in front of them. However, even though you don't know someone maybe on the spectrum, someday you might. And
most
some,
likely
I was
going
to say, yeah. I was going to say probably someday you will.
Yeah,
I mean,
there you
I
go.
I think it's almost safe to say that going about life, you may not know that you've met someone on the spectrum, but you probably will.
But what a great resource for people to pay attention right now as they're driving or wherever they are right now. And even, like I said, even though they may not right now, but they'll lock it in their brain and they'll say, oh, wait a minute, you know, this is a great resource. And of course, give the Facebook page out again, because that's a great resource,
yes,
too.
Yes, facebook.com/Understanding Autism Radio, or if you just search Facebook for Understanding Autism, you'll find us. And we have a page there. You can post your stories or communicate with us. And we'll announce upcoming shows and so on, tell you about guests or whatever.
Which is great. And, of course, if you want to call in, 602-296-3632, 602-296-3632. I think we'll take a break a little bit earlier because you want to get into some stories about anxiety, depression, and ADD and some other issues that people may know, people that have that, and maybe underlying that or co-occurring with it could be autism. And we'll be right back.
Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Hynten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. And Kim, you wanted to go over a couple stories regarding some of these co-occurring conditions that happen alongside the spectrum. So what do we got? You got some stories.
I do have some stories. And for those of you who just tuned in, just a reminder, co-occurring conditions are conditions that occur with a high frequency alongside the autism. So if you're just tuning in, wanted to clarify that point. And a lot of times what we're talking about right now are the co-occurring conditions of anxiety, depression, and attention-related disorders.
And this is important for the listeners because with today's society, A lot of people have great anxiety, depression, a whole sort of ailments that are going on. And so it's important to listen what you're going to say, because there could be some other related issues.
Yeah. Well, you know, the story I wanted to share, there's so many sides to how co-occurring conditions come about. As Paul was saying earlier, it's hard to know sometimes what comes almost first, the chicken or the eggs. Is it the autism that, you know, encourages some of the feelings of anxiety or depression, or vice versa? And I think the answer is it's probably a little bit of both, and I think it depends on every individual and their circumstance. But I was working with a little boy who's he's probably almost 11 now, and he actually has not been formally diagnosed with an autism spectrum disorder. However, he has been diagnosed with ADD, and they've been trying medication after medication, and he's responding very poorly to all the medications. And the parents are sort of frustrated, and because they've had this diagnosis of ADD, they're saying, well, maybe he's just a naughty boy, because here he has this ADD and we're trying all these medications that are supposed to fix the ADD and they're not working. And so that's been a huge frustration for them. Well, finally, you know, after an evaluation with a professional who specializes in autism, it turns out this boy does in fact have Asperger's. And so he did have some ADD type appearing symptoms, but it was actually more reflective of what was relevant to him in the moment versus what might be relevant to us. So if we were noticing something such as like a social cue or, you know, nonverbal communication, he wasn't focused on that. He was focused on the language. So it appeared that he wasn't giving full attention or shifting attention, but, and it could seem very much like ADD if you don't know what you're looking for, which brings back to the point when you asked earlier, how do you know your professional's good? In these cases, it's someone who really needs to understand autism and the co-occurring disorder. So, you know, one of the things I think that, I mean, obviously these parents didn't know better, because they took him to some of the best professionals in their city, you know, although these professionals just weren't as experienced in autism, but they were, well, you know, reputable professionals. So basically, once they found out that he had the Asperger's, you know, they stopped the medications because they weren't helping him. In fact, a lot of the medications for these things can cause side effects. And so that was another concern. And some of the side effects, actually, you have to really speak with your psychiatrist about medicines, but some of them can be permanent, which is really scary. And unfortunately, I've also seen cases where some of the side effects ended up being permanent for some of these individuals and didn't end up really helping, which is unfortunate. But anyway, back to the story. So after much frustration and many medications, it turned out that this boy had Asperger's, and sure, he may have some attentional issues, but they weren't exclusive to the ADD. They're more related to the autism than to the ADD. So, but it took them a while to figure that out.
So did this particular individual then, was there a noticeable difference after they figured out that he was on the spectrum?
Well, it was a noticeable difference in terms of now they knew what to look for. They didn't understand autism because they didn't know they needed to. And once they understood autism, they were like, oh, wait, that's, oh, my gosh, that's him. That, oh, he totally, you know, and then it started making sense to them. And I have to say, the making the sense to them was a huge relief, because they had been so confused by what they were seeing and what they were hearing and what they were told to do wasn't adding up.
And perhaps it changed the behaviors of the parents, which may have changed the behavior of
Well, they're working on it.
But, I mean, that would make sense in a way.
Right. Well, essentially,
it breaks the feedback loop and it starts a new one.
Right. And for them, I mean, that was probably will be their hugest breakthrough, is now their old patterns of communicating based on the assumption that he was being naughty or defiant on purpose, because if he had ADD, these meds would be working, and they're not. And so just the information alone, even if they stopped learning about how to help their son, the information alone has automatically changed their perspective on their interactions and what they're seeing from him. A lot of times, too, when you hear about these co-occurring conditions and medications don't work, parents get the assumption that the individual can control it. And I've seen this a lot. And to a degree, it's possible to learn to control some things, but in essence, this is how their brain's working. So when that assumption is made that this person can control it, how their brain is thinking, without any kind of guidance or support or intervention, isn't really accurate.
Well, and that's one thing you sort of run into a lot as a higher functioning, people who don't really understand it very well, and they think, well, if you just tried hard enough, you could do this. And it's sort of, I like to, my mental image for comparing is, you know, everyone can lift their arms. But as you put more and more weights on those arms, less and less people can lift them. And so, yes, a lot of times we can think or examine a situation in sort of a similar way that you do, but it takes more work for us to do it a lot of time. And so if we keep doing it, we get tired, we can't do it anymore, sometimes we slip. So yes, technically we may be able to do a lot of the things you can do, or sometimes all of the things you can do, but being able to do it as quickly, as often, and as well is the question.
And that's such a great point, because I think, and especially as Paul said, somebody that appears, you know, like Paul, I mean, he's this very intellectual, or, you know, smart, caring, verbal person, and you look at him and you think, wow, you know, the things I'm seeing mean you can do absolutely everything I can do, you know, and not just him, but in that range, it's really easy for the eye to just believe what it sees on the surface and not think about the underlying processing and kind of different experience of development than, you know, that person has.
Well, and then a lot of people try to explain things through their own experiences. So if you see someone not doing it, you think, why would I be acting that way? And that's never the right question to ask with someone on the spectrum. So
it's just a totally different brain experience.
So it's half the equation then would be the caretakers, the parents, the family, whoever. They also have to take responsibility, it seems like, and accountability on how they think about it. How they think about it. It sounds like it, because that's, you know, any interaction involves two people, right?
Yeah.
So it would seem that would be important.
Well, it's the most useful. I mean, obviously, the optimal situation is for all parties to be willing to and open to communicate. Usually, it has to start with the parents or the guides, because they're going to be able to see the value of that easier and quicker than perhaps the person on the spectrum. Not always, but sometimes.
And that's sort of coming back to the co-occurring conditions. Why awareness of these is so important is because if you diagnose someone with one of these co-occurring conditions rather than diagnosing them as something on the spectrum, then you're treating the wrong thing. And that sort of just ruling out medication entirely, that still allows you to create the wrong feedback loop. And one of the big problems is that autism is something that you diagnose with symptoms. There's no blood test for it. There's no screening for it, really. There may be some evidence that we can look forward to that in the future, but at the moment, you are just looking at symptoms. And because there are so many co-occurring conditions, these symptoms can often be misleading. So, you know, you look at someone, you see them as having ADD behaviors, and maybe that's the only way their autism has expressed itself so far, at least on a level that anyone has noticed in their behavior. So it becomes very, very difficult to have a correct diagnosis until you start seeing that, well, he seems to be ADD, but ADD medication isn't working. So just being aware that there are other possibilities out there is really important.
It is. And also, I think, again, I keep thinking about the question you have and how it would relate to listeners and things that I've seen. You know, the question you ask about professionals, I think the other side to having an experienced professional is also having a team of professionals, because not one person is a perfect expert person on everything. You know, people have specialties. And it's important also, I think, as a parent or an individual, you have to be able to feel right about the person you're working with and trust them. And it is okay to question your professionals. I think parents have a responsibility, respectfully. I don't mean attack them or, you know, get in arguments, but it's important if you don't understand something to ask, to see where can I get more information, you know, things like that. That inquisitiveness, I think, is really important on the part of the parent and the client.
Especially, as you said, some some treatments or side effects, I should say, are permanent, you want to be
well with medications.
Yeah, with so you want to be really careful.
Very
it sounds
careful.
Like,
especially with kids. I mean, I worry about that for people of all ages, but particularly for children, it scares me a little bit because, you know, they're little people, and some of these medicines people are using are pretty heavy. So you got to be really careful with that.
Some of the professionals, I mean, it goes to the professionals too. There's really three people here. The people that, you know, might be on the spectrum or with these co-occurring conditions. You have the parents, the caretakers, and you have the professionals. But the same applies to the professionals, that maybe a professional also should be curious and
very
ask
much.
About, well, let me think here.
Right.
Could there be something else?
Oh, yeah.
Because the professionals, if you jump in too quickly,
right.
and it is a permanent side
and
effect,
actually,
that's
you bring
sad.
That up, that's a very good sign of a good professional, too. You really, you know, obviously every professional has a specialty that they feel competent in, and it's also just part of ethics for professionals that they need to operate within their scope of ability. But it's also important as a professional. I don't know how many others feel this way. I personally very much feel this way, that you really need to be open to, one, I don't know everything. I'll have to ask questions to peers and read and gather information in order to do my job most ethically and efficiently. And secondly, you know, not to discount that there could be other things going on. And you know what? I may need to refer this person to see a specialist in this area. You know, and that happens a lot, actually, with autism and the people that I work with. I'll say, you know, I think really maybe you should check this out with this person. Or
I think with any professional, I think.
Well, one of the problems, of course, with someone in Asperger's at least, is that a lot of the behaviors may not appear to be symptoms. That, you know, a lot of it sort of it displays itself as personality quirks. There are things that you go in for a diagnosis and you may not even think is worth mentioning to the doctor. That, you know, that you're looking for help because he's not getting his homework done. And you don't even realize that the fact that he's particularly argumentative might reveal something else. And so, you know, you get there and you may just hold the entirely wrong conversation. And it's not necessarily through anyone's fault that that it just isn't something that's in the scope of what you're looking at. So it's difficult to talk about how it can be missed, because it sounds like you're saying, well, you know, it can be missed if someone's not really doing their whole job. But there's a lot of cases where
right.
what you're looking at is something that really does just look like ADD, because everything
right.
else is additional information, but it's additional information that no one would really think was relevant until someone actually said, well, what about Asperger's? And then you start looking at those things.
I think that's definitely true for some professionals. I think, I mean, in my opinion, I think one of the big things it comes down to is understanding core deficits of autism, because that's reflective more of the processes people are using at what times, you know, when. And to me, when I interact with people, most of the time, I do have a few people that are difficult for me to sort of accurately define, but almost the way they respond and the processes they employ is a big cue for, you know, oh, they're, you know, they're not able to reference me or take my perspective. So no matter what they say, if I can relate it to a core deficit, that's a big, you know, big alarm for me that says that's, that could be something. But I don't know how many other professionals actually take that approach in examining conversation and things like that. So it's quite an analytical process. But I think Paul's right. I think there's a lot of variables to all of this stuff. It's a complex disorder. Nobody knows everything. And we all have to do the best we can, professionals, parents, and people affected.
But that's what makes you a great professional.
What?
What you just said is that you know how to look, where to look. You know, it's not just the what, it's the how. And that's through experience, I suspect, as well as a real passion to understand as much as possible. And
well, thank you. I think one of the things I feel is an asset to my work is for 15 years I've spent such a huge amount of time with people on the spectrum, more so than consulting. I know a lot of consultants, they go into this field and they haven't done a lot of one-to-one interactive time with people with autism, but they more have the textbook knowledge of it. While I have the textbook knowledge of it, I feel my experiential database is much stronger because I've interacted with so many people at different ages with autism, and I've actually been in these scenarios that parents described to me. So it makes it easier for me to help them because I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember when that happened to me or when I had that conversation. That always helps. If you find a professional that has a significant amount of, you know, like clinical time with clients, that's probably a good sign.
Nothing replaces experience. I agree with you. And when we come back from our break, we'll continue our discussion with Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. Understanding Autism. We'll be right back.
At Beer and Bomb and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birnbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
And welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking with Dave Isaac. This is Understanding Autism every second Monday and Tuesday of each month from 3 to 4, starring Kimberly Isaac and Paul Loudon. We've been talking about co-occurring conditions on the autism spectrum. Kim, you have another story. Those stories really, I think, are very helpful. People can relate.
Thank you. Actually, I just want to give out our Google text number also one more time. We have 10 minutes. Please text us. It's 832-278-1441. We want to hear from you. Yes, my story. I have a lot of stories, but since we're talking about co-occurring, and I just gave sort of an ADD example, I do have a story that comes to mind related to depression. And actually, this was another younger person, which is unusual. I don't have very many younger ones anymore, but he's about 12. And he's actually a gifted child. So he's in a gifted school. His IQ is like off the charts. And, you know, he doesn't have any friends right now. He was diagnosed with Asperger's when he was about maybe 6 or 7. And the thing is, I mean, he doesn't know he has Asperger's. You know, his parents haven't told him. But he knows he's different. And he knows that he's really good at some things. But he also realizes it's very hard for him to interact. And so a lot of times, you know, his parents were asking him to do things socially and interactively. And he would be very protestful. And he would say things like, it's too hard. It's too hard. And what was interesting is, you know, looking at it without the autism involved, his parents were like, oh, come on, get over this. It's not that hard, you know. But when they actually understood. I mean, first of all, I really commend this kid for actually communicating. It really was too hard for him. He was being honest, and he was trying to say it in the best way that he could. The thing is, his parents put a lot of demands on him, not accounting for the fact that some of these interaction things were genuinely hard. And he would say things like, I want to please my mom and dad, but I just can't do it. I'm a failure. I obviously there's something wrong with me. And he became actually very depressed, to where he had to be put on medication because he was feeling so bad. Why? And he was able to see the kids around him were able to do the things that people were asking of him and that his parents wanted for him. And obviously they have the best intentions. They weren't being torturous and mean, but they were like, my kid is gifted. You know, why isn't he making friends? We don't understand, like, where this disconnect is. And basically all he wanted to do was spend time, you know, in his special interest, which was reading books, you know, about Greek mythology constantly. And nothing, if you tried to break him from that, he was very upset because that was his comfort zone. I know what you're going to say, Paul.
I have no idea what you think I'm going to say. I didn't have anything to say.
Oh, I thought you were having a thought. Okay.
I had something to say.
What did you have to say?
It sounds like Albert Einstein. He was very interested in physics, and look what the gift he gave to the world.
Right. No, I mean, yeah, there, like you were saying, actually, I think it was off the air. There is always a flip side to some of the strengths that people on the spectrum have. But back to the depression side of it is because he was aware enough, he was able to see, I'm letting everybody down, but I don't know what to do or how to do it to make sure I'm doing what people want me to do. And he was actually sort of able to communicate that. But what was frustrating for the parents is they didn't know either until they began some parent training and education. It was so confusing for them because they're like, you know, our son has been in this gifted program and he's able to do so many things. He has to just be making this up. You know, he's lazy or he's spoiled or he's this or he's that. And they're like, well, we're not going to buy him any books anymore. You know, they were just, it turned into so much anger and frustration. And so anyway, this boy ended up becoming very depressed, where I think in this case, the Asperger's and his, you know, the disconnect between his abilities and how to do these things and his high awareness of people around him, actually depression came in as a result of the awareness of his disability. And so I wanted to give that example sort of as a case where that co-occurring condition came up as a result of sort of an awareness that he had that, you know, he just couldn't do what people wanted him to do.
So it wasn't quite a co-occurring. There's a sequence to it.
A sequence, but it is considered.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, co-occurring. Okay. But yeah, but that, I also see that a lot in adults.
Well, and I mean, if he hadn't been diagnosed with Asperger's first, he still would have encountered that feeling of not fitting in and that depression, and that could have led to a completely different treatment plan or path of diagnoses if that was the first thing people really noticed.
And I do, and I work with some adults who were diagnosed in their 40s, and that's another huge thing. I mean, in fact, it's interesting because I know in Paul's case, he was relieved by the diagnosis. I work with some people that are not. They're very angry about it. They see it as it's ruining my life. It's ruined my life. It's all over for me because of my age. But what's interesting is actually some of these people I'm thinking of, they were diagnosed with depression, anxiety their whole lives until their 40s. And finally, it was revealed that it was, you know, Asperger's, but they do tend to be more depressed as adults when you realize, if you come to a point of self-awareness where either A, you feel like you can't please everybody or do what you're supposed to be doing, and whatever that is in their minds. I mean, some of these adults I work with, they take it quite literally. I am supposed to have the white picket fence, the wife, the two children, and the dog. Literally, I mean, that's what I'm supposed to have, and I don't have that. What's wrong with me? And they're not actually always very flexible as to why that's not really accurate anyway, which is a whole other story. But anyway, a lot of times with adults, I see the development of depression if and when they start realizing either they're missing something or they think they should be doing something a certain way. So a lot of times explaining to them too and helping them to see everybody takes a different path. You know, some of the people I work with think, okay, by the time I'm 21, I should have done this. 25 should have been this. And I'm thinking, well, that's not always true for everybody. And I try to shed some light on the fact that people take different paths. And that's okay as long as you're continuously improving yourself.
So a quick question. Is it more common, or where is it more common on the spectrum? High functioning or not, where these co-occurring conditions happen? Is it that you see
it's
it across?
All of it.
Is it really? It's
oh, yeah.
There's not one place more common, like on high functioning versus not.
No.
I would hazard that in most cases, if they aren't high functioning, you're probably going to spot the autism first.
Yeah, I mean,
but
maybe
they're still
I
going
don't know,
to
actually. But yeah,
I mean, I think a lot of times the high functioning, well, the really sort of really high functioning, sort of get by for a while before someone spots the autism, and that gives them sort of more opportunity for the other.
Well,
conditions
that's
to
true.
Sort of express themselves.
But I mean, like, I mean,
but,
yeah, I guess it depends.
Even if you're completely nonverbal and having severe issues of all sorts, you still have the issue of not understanding why these things are happening,
right.
Not understanding the people around you are doing, and that, again, is going to lead you to anxiety or depression. So
right.
it's the opportunity for it to happen is there for anyone on the spectrum.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it is such a spectrum, but I mean, for people that have, I mean, here's the other thing, though. Co-occurring conditions, which we didn't talk about today, are speech impairments and motor impairments, which you wouldn't think of as co-occurring to autism. We'll have to get into that into the next show. But
yeah, there are a lot of physical
but see,
co-occurring
that's,
conditions,
but that
too,
actually is why
about.
It's like, well, we're talking about just a handful of co-occurring conditions, but really autism itself is core deficits in the way a person's processing. In addition to that, many people have speech problems and many people have motor, physical movement problems, and people have these, you know, psychological or psychiatric related conditions, but there's actually a lot more to it, which we're going to have to get into in another show.
All right, give out some more contact information.
As always, we'd love to hear from you at facebook.com/understandingautismradio. Get in contact with us, let us know what you'd like to hear about on future shows, or just tell us what you think.
And thank you, Kim. Thank you, Paul. We'll see you next month, second Monday and Tuesday, 3 to 4.
And also remember to go to zoowalk.org and sign up for the ZooWalk on October 1st. You don't want to miss it. And sign up under our team name, Autism with Excellence.
And I'll be there. I can't wait. And thanks again. We'll see everyone tomorrow, the sports show. Have a great night.
If you would like.